Hello and welcome to Podcast and Bullshit. I am your host, Travis Foster, and I am joined by freelance extraordinaire and author of Up, Up, Down, Down, Left, Right, a book about freelancing, Nathan Muhn. See, you just told me it, and I just screwed it up already. Minion. Yay. There you go. How are you doing today, Nathan?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing
good. like I said, I really want to do this interview because a lot of, you know, I'm a, what you would call, I guess, independent game journalist, i.e. I don't get paid to write about video games, but I write about it. And I know I have a lot of fans and a lot of friends who are on the podcast who do, and you're, like I said, you're coming up with up, down, down, left, right, you know, a freelancer's guide to writing, video game journalism. So, like, there's a lot of questions that we all have, you know, in response to, you know, getting into doing freelance, getting paid to do what we love, honestly.
Cool. Questions are good.
Right. So
I might have some answers. Possibly.
So how did you get started? How did you get started working, you know, freelance and getting a hold of doing game journalism?
Okay, I'll start, try to keep it the short version. I started off writing a little over 10 years ago professionally. I was a reporter for a newspaper up in, kind of out in the middle of nowhere in rural Vermont. And I, out of college, I studied journalism and I got a gig working, you know, at a newspaper doing beat reporting stuff. And I did that for quite a few years and eventually got to the point where I was looking to do something else. And before that, I always, you know, I religiously read the major gaming sites, and I, you know, I had all the magazines and stuff. So I've, you know, I've been a really big gaming fan since I was a kid, and so I started thinking about ways that I could get in and start doing this for a living, or at least make some money, or at least even just do it, you know, just to write about games. And I was dismayed because I would spend a lot of time looking at stuff, and pretty much it seemed like all the steady gigs, all the jobs, you know, in the game industry, writing about games, were on the West Coast, and I'm from out of the middle of nowhere, you know, rural Vermont. It's pretty far, and I'm definitely never really wanted to move across the country, like some people are more willing to do. So I was kind of like, all right, well, trying to think of different ways to do that. And I'd studied a lot about freelancing in college, and I've done a little bit of freelancing when I was a reporter, but I ended up moving down towards the New York City area for a couple of years and working remotely, and that kind of freed up some free time. So I decided that while I was still working remotely at the newspaper, I would start pitching, you know, articles, ideas, and try to get in with a couple gaming-related sites or publications. I did some like comic book and music coverage too, but games were definitely the thing I wanted to do the most of. So once I set my mind to that, I did a lot of research about how exactly do you go in and start pitching, you know, cold pitching and trying to get in, you know, get in with editors. And I spent a lot of time really just focusing on that, trying to, like, figure out how to do it and practicing writing pitches and getting stuff, you know, together on the side. I just started pitching places, and it took a while to kind of get some, you know, get some the attention of editors I was looking to get. But I did manage to get a couple bites and wrote a piece here and there, and found that it was really, I really enjoyed it, and it was, you know, I did a couple freebie things for a while. There was a couple of months where I was doing regular coverage for a site called Randomville, which I think it was now probably just a blog. I don't think it really did much, but it was just kind of a small, like, artsy, indie, you know, music, hipster kind of site where they, you know, they did, like, book reviews and games and comics, and it was really just, like, it was pretty relaxed. So it was a good place to kind of just try writing about something different, because I was coming out of the news world. So it was like I kind of had to relearn how to do stuff like writing or game review, doing more arts and entertainment focused coverage. So that was kind of a little bit of a good break to kind of get back into the groove of doing that and kind of just feel comfortable with it again. Because I did do some of that at the newspaper I was at, but it was mostly like straight news and features and interviews. So anyway, that was the long version. But basically, I started working and doing some writing for you know, a couple different sites, and I started pitching some bigger sites and kind of gradually worked my way up into paying work, into better paying work, and then into bigger sites as I was doing that. So that's the long answer.
I mean, no, that's fine. What I would ask is, like, how long did you take from, you know, from initially, well, this is what I want to do, to actually doing a pitch? Like, are we talking, you know, this was like a couple months, or was this like a year?
It was pretty quick, actually. Because I was already doing writing professionally on a regular basis, so I was already really comfortable with interviewing people on the phone, or, you know, I'm not really a phone person, but I kind of had to be for my job, so I got used to doing a lot of interviews and just talking to people and kind of figuring out what makes a good story. So I used those kind of initial chops I had built working at the newspaper to kind of apply that to the game world and comics and stuff I was interested in that was more extracurricular at the time. So it was pretty quick, though. It was a matter of, like, you know, I spent a good month or two really just kind of reading up on dug out my old college books and went online and did some research and just kind of trying to get a feel for, like, okay, how do you do this? And at the time, there wasn't really anything at all that was game journalism specific, or, you know, it was all pretty much kind of general freelancing advice. And a lot, even back then, about 10 years ago or so, maybe a little less than that, but the internet was totally different than what it is now. So there's, you know, they were still writing about, oh, you have to send your pitches through snail mail and wait 3 months to get a response. And so it was kind of outdated at the time, and I'm trying to figure out how to apply that to, you know, more fast-paced way of doing things. But after a couple months, I sent a couple pitches, and I sent some pretty crappy pitches to start off. You know, I've had some stinkers. I did get a couple pitches. You know, after the first few, it got a little bit easier, and, you know, I recycled pitches, and kind of if one place rejected them, I went and retooled it and tried to re-angle it and try somewhere else. And eventually, doing that for a couple months, I did get, I got a piece that was published and kind of used that as sort of a springboard. I kind of went about it not necessarily the right way at first, whereas I did some interview stuff ahead of time, and I kind of wrote, I think the first couple of pieces I did, I actually wrote the full pieces out because I wanted to just get that down, and then I was pitching the finished pieces, which is typically reverse of what you would be doing normally as a freelancer. So I kind of did the interviews, then kind of tried to shop it around, sort of, and that eventually worked, but it was a lot. It's kind of a way, weird, you know, it was a tricky way to go about it. Yeah.
Well, I would ask, you know, as a guy, like I said, yeah, I'm a guy who's just getting started. A lot of people I know are just getting started. What are, like, the big don'ts when you go to do a pitch? Like, what would you, like this is one, like, it's like, never do this, or, you know.
Well, there's quite a few things that you probably shouldn't do, but I can try to pick some of the bigger ones. It's really important if you're writing a pitch to take the time, some of this is kind of general stuff. I'm sure a lot of people have heard it before, but really take the time to read the publication that you're pitching. Spend some time actually, you know, looking at the articles, looking at the different kinds of articles. Get a feel for, like, the tone of the publication, and spend some time looking at, you know, the names that folks are writing there and seeing, you know, who's on the, you know, editorial staff, and, you know, what other writers are there, and kind of what kind of pieces are running. If you don't take the time to do that, it's a lot easier to pitch something that by accident that might not be a good fit for the publication you're trying to pitch for, and that ends up being a waste of your time and a waste of their time. The more you do research up front before you start pitching, it definitely helps you kind of figure out what's a better place to try to pitch certain ideas. That's one thing, you know. I guess that's not really a do, it's more of a do, but as far as don't is, I mean, you really got to take the time to spell check, not just running a spell checker, but actually, like, reading through your pitches. Sometimes people do out loud. I don't really like to do that, but I do read them a couple times through. And it kind of, just to get a feel for, like, does something sound weird? Am I grammatically off? Is there spelling errors that I'm missing?
Right.
Stuff like that. Because when you send in a pitch that has, you know, some editors are lenient And if you send a really good idea that's, you know, really well put together, they might be willing to overlook a typo or, you know, some silly grammar slip. But oftentimes, if you do that, and that's, you know, all it takes is one slip, and an editor will see that and go, okay, I'm not going to waste my time. The person doesn't bother to check their work ahead of time, so that they kind of apply that as being indicative of what the finished pieces are going to be like. So, you know, taking the time to spell check and not sending stuff the second you're like, okay, just slap it up together on your email and then fire it off, that's probably a no-no. Better to let it sit for a little while and reread it. Other don'ts? There's a bunch of them. I don't want to bang on the drum too much. But there's professionalism is pretty important. It's funny because a lot of editors and freelancers in the industry, they communicate online. A lot of people know each other. So it's funny because people will talk and you'll hear horror stories of some of the really horrible pitches that people get. And it's sometimes the stuff is like, you know, people send things that are just so unprofessional. Calling editors names, being like, you know, you need to run this, or you're.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to give an example.
I've heard the horror stories. Like, I've heard, I was talking to Dan once, and he was talking about, like, the start of GR, and this guy, you know, he had this blog, and he was a big name, like, I guess it was, like, a bigger name blog, and then as soon as he, like, they called him back, he was like, I knew it, and they can't run a website without me, and da-da-da, so... Yeah, like, you have to be professional. Like, people see, and people know, and people talk.
that's really important that you bring that up, too. Like, there's one thing, being humble is really important. I mean, everyone, you know, as you move up in the world and you get more gigs and stuff, it's cool, you know, to be, you know, proud of your accomplishments and stuff. But, like, to be like, hey, I do this, and hey, I'm all this, and I'm kicking all this ass, and... Can I say
that? Well, I mean, like, some podcasts call it podcasts and bullshit, so.
All right, okay. But, you know, so, like, to be really, you know, to be, like, very braggy and very, you know, egotistical is not really a good idea in this industry. And, you know, it's better to just be down to earth and keep your wits about you. Because, you know, people get a chip on their shoulder sometimes. Other times people just, you know, don't behave professionally, and that kind of gets back to what I was saying before. It's like, if you're trying to, you know, pitch an editor at a publication that they want to, you know, that pays money or even doesn't pay money, there's a certain level of professionalism they expect. So if you're just coming in with guns blazing and, like, you know, throwing off swear words in your pitches and saying inappropriate stuff, or just being crass or very nonchalant and unprofessional, they're going to take note of that and not necessarily react very kindly or be very impressed by that. But yeah, so I don't know if there's other things.
No, that's perfect. You know, if they want other things, they can get the book when it comes out.
There's actually a whole chapter on do's and don'ts, and some of the stuff I mentioned, but there's a lot of other things in there, just about different things, particularly relating to pitching, but also just into generally how you conduct yourself, you know, as a professional and as a writer and as a freelancer.
Actually, I have a question from Twitter. This is from SmikeU1123, and he wants to know, what was the best project you had to turn down, like the best freelance project that you couldn't do for one reason or another?
Oh, man, that is a tricky question.
Well, one you can talk about, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's, I don't know if I could think of, like, the best one offhand without really spending some time thinking about it, but there have been some really cool ones I've had to turn down, just cool opportunities. I think one of them, I got emailed out of the blue one day from an editor. I think it was for a European gaming site that's pretty well known, and they needed a freelancer. I think this was back, I don't know how many years ago this was. This was back when they had that big volcanic eruption, and it was messing up all, like, the air travel was all screwy between Europe and the U.S. for a while.
Iceland, the Icelandic volcano.
Yeah, it was crazy. So they needed somebody to go cover, like, a preview event. And it wasn't, like, for anything super crazy exciting, but just they were going to, you know, they need someone to hop in a plane, fly over, and tackle this event for a weekend. And I was pretty stoked that, you know, that was a possibility, and it ended up not panning out because it was like, all right, well, I couldn't swing it. It was too short notice. Right. But I guess that's not really like that exciting.
Oh, no. I mean, it's...
I mean, I've had to turn down really awesome review opportunities for cool games. I've had to turn down events. I mean, I was supposed to go... Sometimes it's just the stupidest stuff that can really just screw you in terms of what, you know, not being able to get to do things you really want to do. Like, I had booked a whole bunch of, I had booked bus travel down to New York City. I think it was even a year or two ago to cover, I think it was the 3DS launch. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing got screwed because there was crappy weather. And it was just, it was like freezing rain, ice covered everywhere up here where I'm at in Vermont. And it was just not feasible for me to hop on a bus and go down to the city for a 3-4 hour drive. So I, up until the last minute, I wasn't sure if I was going to go, and I wasn't able to go. And that kind of stunk because I lost out on quite a bit of writing and some money. But so that was a bummer. But, I mean, there's you know, sometimes you got to turn down stuff. Like, there'll be really cool opportunities that come up, like to interview a particular person that's really interesting to you, or you know, or to write for a magazine that maybe or a publication they're really like psyched about, but you don't. You know, either it's not feasible for one reason or the other, or time just didn't work out, and it sort of happens a lot, actually.
Right. No, that's understandable. I said, I noticed this year you started to do, like, a little bit, like, different freelancing. Like, you started to do the beer, freelancing on the beer site and everything. Is that due to, this is something, like, I'm consciously afraid of, because I am trying to get started and everything. You know, we're seeing a lot of sites, you know, trim down. We've seen publications, like, just in the past couple of years, like GamePro, PlayStation, yeah, Official Magazine, Nintendo Power, you know, shut down, yeah, just because of supply and demand. Was your branching out, you know, not only just to do something different, but because of the well of writing jobs are kind of trending downwards, not shriveling up, obviously, but just like, yeah, trending downwards a little bit?
That's a really, really good question. I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a really important issue for freelancers, not just in this industry, but just in general. Yeah, I mean, I started branching out recently just because, after you spend a long time, there's a couple different reasons. One, I think, you know, I tend to get bored if I do the same thing for too long.
I understand that.
So I mean, there was a couple of years that I spent a lot of time just firing off really large volumes of game reviews. So I just review game after game after game. That got to the point where I needed a break, and I swapped back over and started doing more feature writing. And before that, I did a lot of feature writing. I took a break from that. So everything kind of tends to be cyclical. And that's one of the cool things about being a freelancer, is you don't necessarily have to be locked into any one kind of groove for any particular amount of time, because you can swap it up and change everything up. So I get bored if I do things, you know, if I spend too long doing the exact same kind of thing. So it was nice to kind of explore some different opportunities again. Financially, you know, I had it, with all the magazines closing lately, the past couple of years, it's been rough to some extent. I think 2 or 3 years ago, I was doing really well, because every year making more income and actually doing really quite well, and just to the point where the bottom kind of dropped out for a while, with a lot of places closing. What They Play, which was a really cool kid focused, parent focused gaming website, was purchased, and then, you know, maybe a year later was shut down. And that was a really steady gig that was really awesome for a lot of, you know, for a couple of folks who really were regular contributors. It was a big blow when that shut down. GamePro was another one. I was really excited to finally get into GamePro, because I remember reading as a kid, and I did, you know, a couple pieces for the print magazine and a lot of stuff for, you know, online, doing some reviews. And that was a nice steady gig that actually helped pick up some of the slack when some of the other places shuttered, and then that went down. the Future Yes magazines, like, you know, PlayStation Magazine, I contributed for a couple years straight doing, like, the downloads column and a bunch of different reviews and stuff, and that was a great gig. And Nintendo Power was an amazing, I mean, I really, I used to read that when I was a kid when it first started. I really loved that magazine, And it was cool to finally, you know, to be able to break into it before it was eventually shuttered. But I wasn't expecting that at all. So, there, you know, you've got these big magazines that are, you know, changing because of the way that landscape is changing as far as the digital landscape and you know, just ad sales and all that. So when you, with these places shutting down, it certainly makes sense to kind of start looking elsewhere for sort of a safety net, because when you're a freelancer, it's like, you know, the more buckets you have your hands in, I don't know if that makes sense of analogy wise, but you know, the further you're spread out, the better typically, because if a place goes under, then you have other options to fall back on. So there was a period of time where I started to kind of get bored. I got a little bit bored with the cycle of what I was doing, so I started looking elsewhere.
That's kind of scary. You know, like I said, we see all these sites.
Yeah.
You know, who knows how long OXM has, you know, and then when the next generation is there going to be need for the sites and everything. You know, how do you keep optimistic about, well, you know, there will always be this?
Yeah, that's good. After the kind of doomy, gloomy thing I was talking about before, for someone who spent a lot of time freelancing in the industry and kind of works your way up to the top and there's not a lot of other directions to move in, it can be problematic. You know, another reason to kind of branch out and to explore different things while still working for a lot of the publications I write for. But for people who are just starting, also people who've been at it for a while, there's lots of opportunities still, and it's kind of interesting to see how things are changing. You know, considering how many different magazines did shut down in the past couple years, newer ventures like Polygon, Killscreen is another one. I mean, some more interesting sites and publications are starting to pop up and do pretty well. So, they're offering decent rates for freelancers, and they're interested in different kinds of pieces. So those are really good places for someone who's maybe starting out, or even someone who's well established to you know, score a new gig or get some steady work in there. I see, you know, I see places shutting down, but there's still plenty of places that use freelancers. In fact, pretty much every publication that all the big ones you can think of, all use freelancers to some extent, and you know, maybe to some extent more than others. But there's really only one magazine I can think of that doesn't use freelancers because it's awfully entirely staff operated. But that's pretty much it. And there's lots of different opportunities and different kinds of writing too. People always need news teams, to do the blog stuff and the regular daily coverage, and then, you know, feature writing and reviews and previews are pretty heavy duty. So there's lots of opportunities and options for people looking to break into new gigs. And you know, I don't see game journalism going away probably ever. I think it's going to be changing a lot. I think in the next couple of years, it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, how that change affects things. But it's certainly a feasible career. Freelancing is particularly because it's an easier way to get into it rather than trying to relocate or trying to find those hard to get full-time staff gigs. And the other thing is too, there's a lot of turnover too. A lot of the freelancers that that were around when I first started out have moved on to other positions in the industry. Folks have gone to PR. A lot of people they'll go into the game development side of things or work for publishers. There's been a lot of that even recently in the past couple of months, which is interesting to see.
Right.
And, you know, it's not entirely surprising because a lot of people get into it because they really love games and they want to eventually make games or, you know, be involved in that way. So those are opening up other opportunities too, because places that, you know, you have a senior writer or freelancer that's a regular contributor move on to something else, and that creates a hole that needs to be filled often. So there's, you know, it's cyclical. There's, you know, people come and go. There's new gigs that come and go, and it's like kind of just keeps cycling through. So there's it's not as depressing as it sounds sometimes, but there are certainly months where, particularly when magazines close or whatnot, it gets really gloomy at times.
So I have a question also. This is like more dealing with, you know, different companies, whether it be PR or game companies themselves. You know, Our site, we had a problem with BioWare because we got information that maybe shouldn't have came out. How do you handle that as a freelancer? Have you gotten to the point, and like I said, you don't say names or anything, where you know, you've done something and a developer is like, okay, well, I'm never going to work with you, period. I don't care what publication you work for or anything.
Yeah. I don't know that I've as an individual, I've gotten into those kind of situations. I've certainly run into situations where, you know, being a freelancer, you inevitably have to work with PR. And there's a lot of great PR folks and a lot of great folks that work at different publishers that are super cool to work with. And sometimes there's people that are just not so cool to work with or not very easy to work with. And, you know, that can be problematic. But it's sort of, you know, you don't really know that's going to happen until it happens. There's times where, you know, you'll be writing stuff and you'll get emails from people saying, trying to influence, say if I'm writing a review, I've had instances where someone actually emailed me out of the blue trying to say, hey, let me know if I can help you out or if I can give you any information or let me do this and that the other thing. And that's not really appropriate because I'm trying to evaluate their game, you know, as objectively as possible and not, you know, don't need to be influenced by any sort of outside pressure. So there's instances of weird stuff that happens and you're kind of like, this is weird. And at which point you shut it down and then it's done with. I don't know about like being blacklisted. I know that happens. I haven't had any real issues with that, fortunately.
Right.
I've certainly, you know, when I work with, if I have to get review copies through PR or, you know, it's much easier when you're working directly with editors at a site and you can get copies that way because then you're sort of removed from the behind the scenes and you can focus on what you're doing. But yeah, places definitely get nasty grams from, you know, PR from other folks that don't take kindly to their games getting trashed or what's, you know, saying that someone was inaccurate or whatever. It's hard to deal with those kind of things when they come up, but you know, as long as you're doing the best you can to be on the up and up and do your job, you know, that's the easiest way to avoid kind of bottlenecks and issues like that. But I haven't had, unfortunately,
it's not that.
Not
yeah,
unfortunate.
Exactly. That sounds like the exact opposite of unfortunately.
Damn, I haven't been blacklisted.
I like I said, I'd be remiss to have you on and not talk about a couple game stuff, especially this should be airing. We're recording before the week before E3. And this should be airing during E3. Is there anything like you're really interested in? I know everyone, and like I said, it's before E3, so maybe everyone's opinion has changed, but everyone has been really down on the Xbox One.
Yeah, I've been reading about that.
About it. Well, I can say personally, I did. You know, I went on Twitter. I was angry because I really, that was the last thing I wanted to see. I think I tweeted the day before. It's like, I don't care what it is. You could show me like two or three games. I don't care. I just didn't want it to be an entertainment machine because I have my own purpose reasons why it shouldn't be an entertainment machine, and then it becomes an entertainment machine. But I wouldn't say it wasn't this temporal hatred for it. I was just disappointed.
Yeah.
How was your feelings towards that, and what are you like kind of looking forward to see from them from E3 and also from PS4 and Wii U?
Oh, this will be an interesting question. I've been sort of paying attention to all that. It's kind of hard. I've had a hard time being like super excited about this next round of consoles because I feel I'm kind of a PC gamer. I mean, I play obviously all the different systems and whatnot, but like I'm kind of a PC nerd, so I spend a lot of time playing, you know, upgrading my graphics card and playing whatever latest thing comes out. So as far as like better graphics and that kind of stuff, I've played a bunch of games that are way better visually than what's currently being offered in the current generation. So that's not as big of an excitement to me. I still get excited about it. I mean, it's cool when, you know, with certain, you obviously you get certain franchise games that come out with each console that are only going to be on that console that are going to be looking really
right.
Awesome.
You, like you, you're likely not going to get an HD Mario on, you know, yeah, right. on any every system. Like it can only be a Wii U.
Exactly. But I mean, you know, it's hard because like it's hard to differentiate. It's like, oh, everyone comes out big and saying we're gonna do this next nebulous thing that's gonna be awesome, and it's not always a lot of tangible specifics on how it's gonna be awesome. It's sort of, hey, we're gonna be awesome, and talking very vague vagueness. You know, it's gonna be, you know, this and that and the other thing. But it's like, you kind of, it's hard to really take all that in and know how it's going to turn out until they start putting things into, you know, into play. Even, you know, just recently the thing with like Xbox, like the you know, I do a lot of indie games coverage of the indie game, you know, channel for Xbox Magazine, and it's like, you know, coming out the gates saying, well, we're not really going to let indies publish on the console, you know, unless they're going through publishers. You know, you can't self-publish, supposedly. But then now, so then they're sort of turning around and saying something different this week. So that's, it's interesting to see. You know, people don't really seem to know entirely what's going to happen.
Right.
With different features, different aspects. And, you know, so it's hard to get excited until you really know what's going to happen. Granted, I'm always psyched to, you know, new consoles is kind of exciting because it's like there's new, as a freelancer, there's those new opportunities. It's like a launch of a console means there's going to be a bunch of new games coming out and a bunch of new stuff to write about. So, you know, after a while it gets kind of boring doing the, you know, the same in the current generation of stuff. It's like, you know, doing the same kind of pieces and the same games. So it gives you a little bit, you know, a little something fresh to write about eventually.
Probably gives you another next gen magazine.
Yeah, and it's certainly interesting to see how what's going to pan out, because I can't imagine, I mean, now that there's no longer really a Nintendo-centric magazine, something's got to, I would imagine, you know, pan out from that. Granted, there's some folks, and I don't know if I have the name of the publication right, I think it's Nintendo Forest or something like that,
yep.
That are working on doing like a publication that sort of picked up some of the slack of where Nintendo Power left off. So it's cool to see sort of an independent movement like that.
That'd be cool. But, it's like, it's very reminiscent of the old fanzine, you know, scene,
yeah,
back in the day where, you know, it was just a couple people were like, hey, we'll put this together. We're fans of this and we'll, you know, go do it. It's sort of like what Go Nintendo does, you know, online, yeah, and everything.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's cool to see that. It'll be interesting to see like what comes, you know, out of the next launch of consoles, if it creates more writing opportunities beyond just having more games and stuff to write about. But yeah, I imagine there'll be some more stuff coming down the pike. You know, it's cool when things change, because some level something's different, gives you new things to kind of think about, and it'll be interesting to see once these consoles actually launch what happens.
Yeah.
The launch of the Wii U kind of, it's like, okay, awesome, and then nothing for a really long time.
Well, it's games, right? And I guess that's what, yeah, you know, ultimately, I think that's what people have to realize, you know, your machine, like I said, again, that was one of the big problems with the Xbox One. I was looking at it, and I was like, well, I have a computer I can do all of that with. You know, I can
right,
check my fantasy football scores and record television or switch TV or watch TV on my computer. And I don't need, you know, this box. I need the games, you know. And it's ultimately,
yeah,
it's
a fine line. Yeah, it's a fine line because, like, you know, they want to try to appeal to a broader range of folks, but at the same time, it's sort of the typical issue of, you know, the people who want to play the games versus the people who want entertainment and some level of in between. It's hard to cater to everybody and entirely get it right, but
it'll be interesting
to see what happens.
Like I said, I could definitely go on forever for that. It's something that it just bothers me, and it's a fatty thing, and it's something that one day I should just be like, I'm going to say this and just say it. But like I said, it would, I could go all day on that. Is there anything that you're looking forward to see personally? Like, you like, oh, you know, I can't wait to see The Last Guardian, or I think everyone can't wait to see Last Guardian, but I can't wait to see, you know, Game X or something like that.
Well, I will sheepishly admit, I'm pretty stoked for the DuckTales game. Yeah. It's not really a big release, but man, I spent so many hours playing that thing when I was a kid with my NES Advantage and trying to hammer on that thing to get to the end of the damn game. And so yeah, DuckTales, that's going to be cool.
Oh no! I agree with you. I'm a huge Capcom fan. I was supposed to be at PAX East, and I was actually supposed to go to the Capcom booth. So I was supposed to cover it. Couldn't go, and then I literally get a tweet where somebody's like, "Oh hey, I guess you heard they announced DuckTales HD by WayForward." And I was like, "What?"
WayForward does some good stuff, so I'm excited to see. I like their smaller downloadable things. They got some good indie kind of stuff going on there. But yeah, I mean, I get most excited about indie games a lot. I mean, I really like when there's a good big release that comes out, but like, I really love the short and sweet. You dive in, and it's something different, something funny, funky, weird, whatever. And, you know, so it's like often those games, you don't really find out about them until they're almost out, you know, or you hear about them and it takes like 3 years for them to come out or whatever. So, I mean, I often get most excited about like what the smaller releases are on the console. And there hasn't been too much of that, you know, with the next generation. You know, there's a lot of PC stuff that's kind of coming down the pike. But, yeah, I mean, one thing I will say about that's exciting about the new launch of, you know, next round of consoles is that freelancers who have been around for a while who haven't had the opportunity will probably have a somewhat better chance at scoring a debug in it.
Right.
Probably still not going to happen for a lot of folks, but it definitely... you know, being around for the launch of a new console and being established makes it a little bit easier, I think, depending on how things work. Or hopefully that the new consoles will allow broader options as far as playing early.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like, you know, and I was going to go to this in the next part when I started talking about your book and everything. Well, a lot of people, you know, I can't afford a debug. I can barely afford the PS3 I have. Let alone, you know, a $600 debug unit. What do you use personally? Obviously, you have a high-end computer. Doing PC freelance is a lot easier. I know I've gotten PC review code for games come out, you know, weeks before they come out. Because it's a lot easier way of, you know, sending things over and getting things done. But what else do you use? Do you use a debug or anything like that?
Interesting thing is, I don't. And there's a chapter in the book about debugs, and part of it is just me bitching about the challenges of trying to get one, because I've spent many years trying to get one. But ultimately what I found out from all that, you know, scrabbling to trying to figure out how to score this magical, elusive device for all the different, you know, systems, is that you don't necessarily need one. And I've come to terms with that it's okay. It's okay to not have a debug. But it certainly helps, and it certainly creates a lot of good opportunities freelance-wise. I do a lot of PC stuff, and I've always been a PC gamer since I was a kid. I remember playing like Doom, the original Doom, when it was like 50 megabytes, and that was like my entire hard drive was just one game. Right. And it was, you know, so like I'm used to the constantly upgrading and doing stuff, and I find that, you know, as a PC gamer, it really it makes a lot of opportunities happen for, you know, you can get PC code earlier. Finished code is often very easy to get on PC or through Steam. Publishers will send that out early. Other times you can get preview opportunities, and sometimes just even emailing like indie game studios and be like, hey, I write for this place. I'd really love to check out your game. Do you have, you know, a playable preview version? And sometimes they'll just send something along and you get to check it out. So I find that's really, if you have a PC that can play games, it's really helpful as a freelancer. Just to be able to get those opportunities that you might not be able to get to do early previews or early reviews, long lead stuff that requires typically a debug unit. But it's cool though, because sometimes you know, I'm on a lot of PR lists, so I do get stuff sent here a lot, or just random blasts of things. And I found that, you know, some publishers are releasing early code on disk that plays in retail systems, and it's rare, but it's cool when it happens. I've gotten Wii games sent along that were just like a burned disk, and it worked, and it played, and I could play the game, and I reviewed it for, you know, 2 months before it came out or whatever. And sometimes, you know, PlayStation stuff. I mean, the digital revolution with download codes and a lot of the, you know, the Xbox Live Arcade and PSN and stuff, that really has helped too. Because, you know, you can get high-profile digital games, and often the codes get sent along early.
Right.
But otherwise, I haven't used a debug unit at all. I know quite a few folks have them, and I, you know, I've had lots of conversations with them about the ins and outs of trying to get one and how it's pretty much a crapshoot. But, you know, it's possible. I know folks who started off much later than I did who were able to get them easily, and it's kind of just a matter of who you know and how you work it, but no, it's cool.
I think it's something that I think those will go away as we get towards. Like I said, I know the PS4, their big thing was you can download something and you can play it then, so it would be a lot easier to do a lot more, you know, hey, here's a review code, you know, downloadable only and everything. And
yeah, I think that's going to definitely be a big going into the future. I think that's going to be more of how things are going to work, and I think it'll certainly be a lot easier. I would hope, at least, for folks to get stuff they need to do their jobs, you know, within a reasonable time frame. Because it certainly sucks when you've got like a 60-hour RPG to review and you get code a week after launch, and yeah, so you're sort of working at a disadvantage there.
Speaking of something easy, let's talk about something that was probably completely not. So you wrote your book. We haven't really talked about writing the book. You know, how tense of it was the purpose was it of you writing the book? I know you've done the blog. Well, how long have you done the blog? Can you share?
Well, I started my website. I don't even know when the hell I did that. It was like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, maybe less than that. It's in the late 2008, 2009, maybe sooner than that. I started I wanted to get like a .com website of my name, because that is a good thing to have if you're a freelancer, is just a place to have an online presence, because it's really important to kind of build your brand, and your brand is you essentially, and your abilities and your work. So when you're trying to get your way to carve a niche in the industry, having a website presence, you may not get a lot of web traffic, but it is helpful to have that to direct editors and stuff. So I decided to set one up, and I put information about myself, and I put a resume up on there, and I just did, you know, some random posts and stuff. But eventually I got the idea of that, you know, quick backstory is that I spent a lot of time emailing other freelancers, both when I was getting started and just as I spent more time doing it and would get emails from people asking questions. You know, I've always been really open to, you know, people have helped me out a lot, giving me answers to questions I'd had. You know, I'll email someone and say, hey, do you know anything about this? I really don't know, you know, how to do this, or what's the deal with this? And, you know, I've get a lot of great advice over the years, and oftentimes I'll pass that along. So if someone emails me, you know, 9 times out of 10, and it's usually if I don't, it's because I'm super swamped, I'll get back to them and say, oh, here, you know, sometimes I write like I'll write 1,000 words in response, like, hey, here's all this information. And I go, oh, whoops, I should be working right now. But, so, you know, I don't mind, you know, talking to people and just helping folks out, because it was really, I really valued it when I was starting out to have those questions answered that I didn't have answers to. So anyway, that's how the idea for the book came about. I've always wanted to write a book, multiple books. I've actually written some books and never published them before. And now that I've sort of been doing writing professionally for a long time, it sort of seemed like the next logical step. I didn't realize that Dan was writing a book until it came out, and then I was at that point, I was well into my book writing, and I was like, oh shit. So I quickly checked to make sure that I wasn't like overlapping too much on what he was saying, because I love reading other books about freelance writing and writing and games. I have a lot of different kinds of books, so I would have bought it anyway, and I bought it and I really enjoyed his book. But I also quickly wanted to make sure that I wasn't writing the same book, which I thought would have been really stupid of me to do. But anyway, so before that, I started writing articles on my blog, sort of like, hey, I call them talks or shop talk, where I'm just kind of shooting the shit about here's different things relating to writing about freelancing and video games and whatnot. And usually they're, you know, articles with advice. Oftentimes it's just, you know, quick tips and whatnot. So I started doing that in preparation for hoping to do something bigger with it. And that's kind of what the plan was for the book, was to start writing these blog posts as a sort of initial kind of rough draft framework for what would hopefully eventually become a book. And I started that a couple years ago, like maybe 2 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, I don't know. And those posts got a lot of traffic when I did them, and I was able to build up a pretty good traffic through my blog just from networking with other folks who either already were writing and were interested in it, or who wanted to get into writing and wanted more information. And there's certainly been other folks who've written about freelancing and done articles and stuff, so it's not like it was a new thing to be doing that, but I just wanted to contribute whatever I could to the conversation, albeit how little at times. So that's sort of how that came about, and eventually it started building. I mean, I would check, you know, my after I had, you know, a bunch of different articles up, I'd see how much what's the word count on this, and I'd be like, wow, I've got like 20,000 words of stuff. That's, you know, like a good chunk of words. I could probably expand that. So I just kind of kept at it for a while. And in addition to the blog post, I started writing more stuff that I didn't publish. That was just sort of additional chapters and rough drafts. Mm-hmm. eventually got to the point where I was like, all right, I think I definitely have enough for a book. And I did an outline, and I figured, okay, here's what I want to cover, and here's the chapters that need filling in, whatnot. And it was a long process, and I did a lot of it, you know, my free time between, you know, spend like a 12-hour day writing and then go sit and write, you know, a couple chapters or a couple thousand words. And it was a lot of work. It still is a lot of work. I spent quite a few hours today even just trying to figure out how to make layout happen in the way that I want it to. And I, you know, I'm self-publishing it, and it's a lot. I've always been like a DIY kind of guy. I liked recording my own music when I was in college, playing in bands and putting out my own zines and stuff. And so going through a publisher is not, you know, it was an option I considered at first, but kind of decided that I just wanted to do my own thing in the way I wanted to do it. So that's kind of how I came about to do this. And then with Kickstarter being such a big thing, well, it was a big thing. It's still a big thing. I think some of the excitement has sort of waned slightly. I said, well, I'll do a Kickstarter just to see if that's feasible to help, you know, cover some of the expenses of my time to finish. You know, I had to set aside a couple months just to finish the writing of the book. Otherwise, it probably would have never gotten finished. And, you know, cover the expenses of buying things like ISBN numbers and production and whatnot. So I did that, and I had a good response at first, and I thought midway that I was totally going to tank, and I'd given up on it. But then towards the, you know, as a lot of Kickstarters are, you know, prone to doing, towards the end, people really rallied behind it and made it happen. So that's sort of how the book definitely came about and is now definitely happening, and it's going to be out in August. Wow. So I have quite a bit of work to do still.
your editor on the book?
Yes, Andrew Hayward. He's a great dude. I've been watching. It's funny because I watched Andrew very closely for a long time because he was sort of another freelance colleague that seemed to happen to write for a lot of the magazines and publications that I also wrote for. And then eventually through talking with him, you know, that would happen. It would just so happen that we would become, you know, writing for more publications that we'd also both write for. So, and he's a very prolific dude in terms of getting his name out there and his byline in places. He's written for some almost 50 places at this point, between 45 and 50, I guess. He's definitely works hard and has been a really busy dude in getting in his hands in every publication, which is sort of the ideal, you know, it's sort of the dream as a freelancer is to get into as many places as possible and build your resume in. So he was, you know, when I first started thinking about who was going to edit this thing, I wanted someone who, you know, I thought of a lot of different folks, and it was really hard to kind of figure out exactly who we wanted to go with. I, you know, started looking for some outside people who maybe were familiar with games but were not necessarily in the gaming industry, and realizing that I just wanted someone who had a lot of experience doing what I was doing, so that at least they would know if I was talking, you know, out of my ass about something and I didn't realize. But, you know, Andrew's a really cool dude to work with, and he's an editor at MacLife now. He also does freelancing on the side too, but he does part-time editing, and he's written for a lot of places and has a lot of experience. And we've sort of been kind of, as we've both been gaining momentum in the freelance world and the industry, we've kind of been neck and neck at a lot of places. But so he was really a great person, I think, to bring onto this project, because he really brought a lot to, you know, to the text, and brings ideas to the table that maybe I hadn't seen, and kind of helping me shape some of the stuff I had so it flowed better. And from, you know, being an editor too, he's got that perspective, which I don't have. You know, I've edited other people's work, but not on a really, you know, consistent, you know, basis. So, so he's been awesome to work with, and he's been really gracious with his time too. It's, been a lot of back and forth and trying to figure out how we're going to approach things. And, but I'm really happy with the way the book has come out in the end. I'm looking really forward to seeing it kind of get out there finally.
So what is the first thing you're going to do with the free time once you're done with the book? Like, you know, you're done with the book, and now that period is gone. What's like the first stage?
Well, I'm a masochist. I'm a glutton for punishment, so I'm writing more books. As part of the Kickstarter, I was hoping to try and get more interest in, you know, try to get more people to sign on just to get through to the end. because I really came down to like the last two or three days, and I had a couple thousand dollars more to raise, and I started to freak out because I'm like, there's no way this is happening. And I probably would have eventually put the book out without the funding, but it would have been taken a lot longer, and it probably wouldn't have been as good because I wouldn't be able to hire, you know, a professional editing and you know, book layout and you know, cover artists and stuff. So I started to freak out, and but then, you know, things worked out, and I sort of just lost track of what we were talking about.
I'll just say what you're on to next. He's like, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. All right. So yeah. So I've started writing. So as part of the Kickstarter is I promised to write a second book and give a free copy digitally to everyone who backed the Kickstarter, regardless of, and that was a great idea at the time, and it's still a great idea. I'm excited about it, but basically I'm getting ready to battle plan the next book, which is going to be pretty different, but still game journalism focused and still writing focused. And on top of that, I'm also working on some shorter book projects that will probably be ebooks only. Some stuff that maybe I didn't cover in as great depth in the main book, space
wise. Almost like references. It's something I asked Dan about. You know, I was like, if you could like append size some chapters, would you? And he's like, you know, I never thought about that, but it's something that he thought about. And
yeah,
like that, I think that's really cool, because I understand, like, sometimes, like, I'll get done with this interview and I'll be like, oh, I wish I would ask this, or, you know.
Yeah, totally.
You know, there'll be times where you'll be like, oh, I wish I would have said this, because this would make it a lot easier and everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally. And I mean, like with the main book, there's certain things that I decided not to get into much detail in, just because I didn't want to, you know, with word counts and to keep it from being really expensive to produce and be massive, I wanted to keep it within a reasonable scope. And there were some things, obviously, after the fact, that I was thinking of it'd be interesting to explore. I know the second book that's sort of tied to the Kickstarter is going to be not my own advice so much as I plan to do interviews with a lot of the editors and freelancers and other folks in the industry who've been, you know, who contributed to the Kickstarter, and just in general. I plan to have it be more of a reported book, where I spend some time interviewing other folks to get their take on things, and then kind of weave all that together with my own observations into additional advice and sort of a slightly different focus, but still covering, you know, the freelance world and game journalism in different ways, I think. So that's still sort of nebulous and a work in progress of how I'm going to approach that. It's going to probably be a shorter book, but I will be something I'm going to start working on very soon. And in addition to that, I've sort of started plotting out some very short and sweet ebook kind of almost addendums that are going to be launching probably within a couple months. At least the first one is a couple months of the official book. It's going to be focused entirely on the interview side of things, because I have a really extensive background of interviewing folks for my reporting gig, and I kind of spun that into a conversation about how to, you know, do that focus in the gaming world. But that's not something that I get into much in the main book, in part because by the time I got done the main book, I was like, this is kind of a big topic that doesn't really fit in with the tone and the scope of what I have. So I'm hoping to launch like an ebook only version of this separate interview focused book, which covers the super nitty gritty ins and outs of interviewing folks and in different formats and different things, and working it up and writing interviews into features and different kinds of pieces. And that's probably going to be like a super affordable, like a couple bucks download kind of thing.
I put almost down. Like,
shortly after.
Almost like, you know, standalone DLC.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's a great way to think about it. It's like DLC to the book. Super cheap, but hopefully informative too. And, you know, if I put up, I have some other ideas for different things in that way. But if I do more of those, I might spin those together into like a full, like a compendium kind of thing. I don't know. There's lots of different ideas. Writing this first book has been really exciting, and it's been something I've been wanting to do for a long time, and I feel really comfortable in that I've kind of dug into the messy, dirty process of putting it all together and making it work. So I hope to make, you know, this a bigger part of what I do going forward, aside from just freelancing and doing other stuff too. So hopefully there'll be some more interesting projects. I'd love to collaborate with some other folks too. You know, I don't know if Andrew will put up with me for another book, but maybe he and I will talk about doing some stuff down the road. You know, in collaboration with this kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, so free time, books done, writing more books, more freelancing. That's pretty much it.
All right. What do you do, you know, outside of games, outside of writing? You know, like, I don't want to game, I don't want to write. You know, what do you do for fun outside of that?
I do lots of stuff, actually. It's kind of weird. I didn't have a life for the first 3 or 4 years that I freelanced, because I pretty much worked a full-time job, at least for the first year and a half or so, while I was freelancing, trying to build up, you know, my enough momentum to kind of do it full-time. So I worked 40 hours a week at my day job, and I had to work another 20, sometimes 30 hours a week freelancing, trying to, you know, get by and build up clips and stuff. So I didn't really do much besides sit in my tiny bedroom office at the time and pound the keyboard and email and get very pale and sickly. But, you know, I a couple years ago I moved back to Vermont, which I'm originally from, and my wife and I, we, you know, recently bought a house, and we've got lots of pets, and it's nice to be back in the rural side of things. So I spend a lot of free time, you know, being a homeowner, it's like, oh, I can go garden now, I can go mow my lawn, I can do stuff that humans do, venture back into the human world. So, I mean, I do a lot of other things. I do karaoke. I really love to sing horribly. As you mentioned before, with my writing, I enjoy craft beer. And I've made my own beer before. I really love doing that, too. So it's sort of – that goes well with most of the other things I like to do. I play in a couple different bands just for fun, and free beer and some pocket change and just to have something to do. So I'll play local bars and stuff. But, you know, sometimes I just enjoy just sitting outside and being, like, out in nature and not having to be plugged in all the time, which is hard to not do when you're a freelancer, because all you want to do is, okay, I gotta check my email, oh, I gotta check my Skype, gotta check my instant messaging thingy, my WhatsApps, whatever, gotta go on Twitter and do all that Twitter stuff with the Facebooks and the internets and all that. So it's hard to pull away sometimes, but it's nice to do that, and that's also an important thing to do if you're an aspiring freelancer, is to take some time away from the screen. But yeah, so I do lots of different things. Writing is one of my favorite things to do, and it always has been. So I spend a lot of time doing that. But it's kind of nice to have, you know, a wife and animals and things that draw me away from the computer every once in a while.
All right, Nathan, it has been a pleasure. Like I said, there's so much I would love to ask you, and I can't wait for the book to come out. And a lot of people, like I said, I can only speak for myself, I know there's a lot of people who are trying to get into freelancing, and what you're doing is not only, like, it's something, and that's why I love this industry, you know, that we're in and everything, because a lot of the guys who have been there have been so out of their way helpful to help everyone out. Like I said, you, Dan, Chris Antisu, who used to work at Games Radar and now works at Capcom Unity. Like a lot of you guys have done, like, fantastic work to help people out. And as a guy who's getting in, who had to do his own site so he could at least get started, I want to say thank you for you guys to give us kind of a light to get more into this industry.
Yeah, oh, I appreciate that. And, you know, there's some really cool people that work both in the editorial and freelance side of things. There's some awesome people out in this industry. And, I try to support other folks as much as possible and help folks out when I can. And, you know, there's people that have been doing this a lot longer than I have. I'm not, like, you know, trying to be some guru dude or whatever. I just, you know, I love writing, so putting a book out is sort of natural progression of what I've been doing. But I certainly don't want to come out of the gates and be like, hey, I'm the guy that knows all this stuff, because there's lots of other people that know a lot more than me. And I think it's great that so many people are really willing to step up to the plate and kind of share their knowledge base to let other folks have a shot to do the kind of things that they want to do. That's how I got started. People were really helpful to me. Just when I had questions, a lot of folks were very gracious with their time, and I've always really appreciated that. And I'm happy to spread it forward and to do stuff like this and write on the blog or whatever, or just answer questions when folks email me, which I do spend a lot of time doing. It made sense to kind of transition that into something more of work-related, but you know, it's cool. This is a great industry to work in. It's a fun industry to work in. There's lots of opportunities and different things to do. And it's cool just to see so much exciting stuff happening and different ways that you can, you know, write and experience, you know, a pastime that so many people enjoy, like gaming or nerd culture or geeky stuff that we all, you know, are into. It's fun and it's a cool, definitely a cool gig. So hopefully, you know, and as, you know, folks like me and other folks spend more time doing it and eventually get older, there's certainly more opportunities as we move on. I don't plan on moving on anywhere anytime soon. I'm going to be freelancing probably until I die and an old fart. But other people are, you know, jumping ship and doing other stuff. So there's lots of opportunities for new blood to come in and do it. So I would not be disheartened if I was starting out now. And it takes a lot of time to break in. But, you know, people are willing to help you out. So I'm just
It's all right. It's
yeah.
It's
okay. Awesome. Woohoo!
Where can people find you on Twitter?
Oh, God. All right. I have two Twitter feeds now, which is even more of a pain in the ass than I thought it would be. My main one is at nminier. So it's nmeunier. That's me. And I sometimes tweet about video games. Sometimes I tweet about freelancing. I often share links through my website through there. And sometimes I'll just tweet about random stuff like beer or nerdy things that I like and whatever. Often there's freelance-related advice that comes through there. I have a new Twitter also that is specifically for the book, which is at Game Journal Guide. And that is book-specific stuff. But if people follow that, that's, you know, not just this particular book, but that'll be where a lot of information comes out about future projects and stuff, both, you know, when this book comes out and beyond that. So that's where I'm on the Twitter internets, people.
Do you have a Facebook for the book?
I do. I have no idea how to actually say what the link is, but if you go into the Facebook searchy thing and go up, up, down, down, left, right, and right is W-R-I-T, as in writing, which is the super clever thing that I'm probably actually not that clever. That will take you to the Facebook page. You can like that and do the Facebook things that people do, and that's always fun. And there's also a website for the book, which is http://. Whatever. Just type in freelancegamejournalguide.com, and that'll get you there.
Also, like I said, I can't. If I list all the sites you work for, we would probably be here all day. But your personal website, which does have your link to your reviews and everything.
Yep. NathanMinier.com. I'm not going to spell my name. I'll let you folks try to come up with their own exciting interpretation of how it's spelled. But just, you know, Google some variation of Nathan Minier and freelance book and random things, and I'm sure they'll find me at some point. But
Nathan, it's been a pleasure. Like I said, you people like you are one of the good ones, and I'm glad to be in an industry full of great people.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you having me on, and thanks a lot for taking the time to listen to my random ramblings at length.
It's all right. Like I said, I interviewed Dan Emmerich. That was a longer bird. It was a longer bird. All right, Nathan, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, man. Stop.